Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This podcast may contain explicit language, or everything may be subtly hinted at. Welcome, welcome to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I am Misha Globerman, the host of the Trampoline Hall Podcast. Trampoline Hall, as you might well know by now, is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of topics, but the one restriction is they cannot speak on subjects on which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing about which they are speaking. This, of course, is the Trampoline Hall Podcast. What we do here is we go through our vast archives and choose one lecture from the past to cast to you, our pods. Are you the pods? No, I think we're the pods. Let's not sit here arguing about who's the pods. The important thing is that we play a lecture, you listen to the lecture, you enjoy it. Then after each lecture, we play the Q&A too, because that's a big part of it. We're about halfway through the current little mini season that we're doing here. By the way, if you enjoy the podcast, there's a couple ways you can actually enjoy the show. One is that if you're in Toronto, whenever we start doing live shows again and the pandemic is over, you can come see the show. The other thing is, even if you're not in Toronto, we're doing live shows online. They're actually kind of neat, and I would encourage you to check them out. You can get on our email list, sign up for that list, and we'll let you know when the shows are happening. But now is not the time for that. Now is the time for this. It is time for this episode's lecture. The topic is sleepovers at the office, and the speaker is Adil Dalla.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much for staying. Thank you very much for coming out in the rain. Thank you if you're like me and you've experienced the night in wet jeans. It's a new and unfamiliar and uncomfortable feeling, one to which I never want to have again. But tonight we're going to talk a little bit about sleeping. And I want to talk a little bit about our sleeping systems. And the question that I've been thinking a lot about is, you know, are we doing it wrong? And, you know, my context or my interest around sleeping, you know, obviously you know as a Trampoline Hall lecture, I don't have any expertise in sleeping other than the fact I do it, like you, I assume. If you don't, I'd really like to talk to you after. But you know, I have experience with sleeping. But I don't actually have, I haven't done any research about it until having done this talk. And, you know, the thing that interests me, though, about sleeping is it is something that we all have in common. And so I thought it was something that hopefully from an audience perspective you could relate to. And the other thing that was kind of interesting about sleeping is that I have a bit of a peculiar habit around sleeping. And that habit is that I like and I enjoy taking regular sleepovers at my office, hence the subject of this talk. And this is like, you know, I thought this was interesting because, you know, in going through the subject and the ideas and things that I thought I could talk about, I did a lot of searching online to that vast array of knowledge online, and I said to myself, what are the things that I do that nobody else does? And this was, you know, we all have these things, these weird kind of eccentric or odd habits that we're, you know, we wonder ourselves, does anybody else do it? And you go online and you're like, does anybody else wear you know, cut off jeans underneath their pants, and you find other people who do, and you get really happy. You know, I actually did find many other people. In fact, there was no kind of support group or research around sleeping over at your office. In fact, oddly enough, the only other person who I could really find commonality around this was our curator for this evening, Mark Riel, who in fact for the longest time, I don't know if still had a bunk bed in his office that he built. And so we really jived on this topic. It actually worked really well. There was six of us in this queen size bed, and it worked really well. I fell asleep. I woke up the next morning, and I thought to myself, if there was a mattress lobby, boy, would they be concerned about this. And yes, exactly. If there, amazing lobby to conceptualize, a mattress lobby of all lobbies. They'd have a lot of issues with this notion of co-sleeping. It really, really put a dent in their business. And so there's a lot of cultures in the world where group sleep actually is pretty common. One thing that we're probably mostly familiar with is this concept of siesta. It's practiced in places like Spain and Egypt. If you're not familiar with it, it's like a midday break. And you go back home and you take a nap or you have a meal or you spend time with your family. And then you go back to work and you work later in the day. But you have this midpoint where you get to take a break. The other kind of sad thing I learned, it's really fun to fantasize about the siesta, but the sad thing I learned is, in fact, siesta use is on decline because it's particularly in Spain as they try to align better with Western business practices. It's too bad. But the interesting thing about siesta is it kind of correlates some data that I found and kind of holistically speaking about sleeping. So it turns out physiologically or biologically, our bodies actually sleep really well in 4-hour intervals. So this concept of the 8-hour sleep is in fact right, but in reality, the idea is that perhaps it's actually better split up. NASA has actually done a really fascinating study where they found that the astronauts are 35% more productive after they've taken a 20 to 40 minute nap. And NASA has kind of bought into this idea, and I figure if astronauts are actually allowed to sleep at work, like why aren't I? Google, if you Google, who is consistently among the companies in the world to whom employees rate is one of the best places to work. Google, as Google does, is take napping and sleeping at work to a whole another level. Gone are the days that you have kind of some weird dark room that you're there and you have a little sign. Google has invested in sleeping pods, and they're really fascinating. You sit back in a chair and then you lift this egg-shaped thing and you put it over you, and then you sleep and your feet are dangling out and they're nested everywhere apparently on Google campus. And they really invested. These things cost like $20,000 a piece. And this is Google's statement that we actually think it's important. They've kind of bought into this idea of like Six Sigma napping. And it's not just the best companies in the world. Like some of the greatest minds that we study, or some of the greatest people that we admire, have shown to us that our sleeping systems are perhaps incorrect. Albert Einstein, for example, was a notorious napper. Would work for long stretches and then sleep at abnormal and short periods. And he had this really interesting habit. He would have a pen in his hand and he'd keep it beside himself as he slept upright in his chair. And once he reached a deep sleep cycle, he'd eventually drop the pen and it would wake him up. Bill Clinton was famous actually for his naps. In fact, Bill Clinton I found some research that said Bill Clinton believed naps is actually what powered him up and gave him a competitive advantage when he had to have really tough conversations and negotiations with people. Thomas Edison is probably the most interesting of all. Edison like hated sleep. He actually thought sleep was for the savage. I could share some quotes with you, but they were really harsh. Edison believed sleep was for the savage. And what's a really interesting kind of correlation to make, and I admit it's a bit of an outlandish hypothesis, but like, was Edison motivated to create the light bulb because he didn't want us to sleep as much? And it's really interesting to think about. Modern scientists believe that because of the sleep bulb, we automatically start sleeping 2 less hours. And so, this question of, was this man motivated for this most sublime innovation because he just had a hate on for sleep? We have kind of, the funny thing about to mention about Edison like wore this I don't sleep badge. He actually didn't. It was like a,
just like saying,
figuratively, he liked to boast about not sleeping, but he was behind the scenes a pretty big napper. But I don't actually judge him for that, because like, what person in this room here would say they don't often indulge in a midday nap from time to time, or at least appreciate a midday nap? You know, we all kind of like nap, and I think it really begs the question then, you know, looking at all these different examples, is this concept of an 8-hour sleep in the middle of the night, sleeping by yourself in a bed, really what makes sense? Maybe we have it a little bit wrong. Maybe like our organizations that we work with need to invest in nap rooms. Maybe we need to think about sleeping with other people in a non-sexual manner or a sexual manner that can go hand in hand. And this kind of comes back to where I started. So I do sleep at the office, and I've developed this regimen around it. And what's really interesting thing that I've identified about it is that through sleeping at the office, I've kind of removed the shackles for myself of sleeping in a bedroom. In fact, through that experience, I find that now I'm able to actually sleep anywhere at any time. I have friends in the audience who might provide some evidence of that. And certainly there are pictures of floating around of that also occurring. But I certainly don't think, you know, necessarily sleeping at the office might be for you. It's just one way that you might want to kind of challenge convention. And certainly, you know, sleeping at the office or having sleepovers at the office, you know, there are safety issues, there are logistical issues. You know, as a side note, one time I'm clearly very comfortable at my office, and I guess that it's probably a good thing, but it doesn't really work out always. One time I went on a date. We went out for dinner. We said, where should we go after? I said, why don't we go to the office? I didn't really think much about it. You know, we're sitting there. It was you know, totally, you know, there was nothing physical happening. And then the girl said to me, she said, did you bring me to your office for our date? And I said, yes. And I hadn't really thought about it. And I thought, and it dawned on me at that point that I had kind of developed this unnatural relationship to where I had actually worked. So I get it. I get the sleeping over at the office. I'm not advocating that you necessarily sleep over at the office, but what I am actually, you know, hopefully getting across is that perhaps you might want to sleep and think about sleep a little bit differently. You know, we do have an anxiety around sleep, an obsession around it. We're worried about not getting enough time. We're not worried about getting the right mattress. You know, we're worried about, you know, getting the right situation. We have to go home. We have to go to our room to sleep. And then if we don't get the right sleep, we develop these systems to which we need to remove our technology from the room, or we need medication. You know, all these things are kind of growing, kind of a paranoia around us not getting enough sleep, where really it might just be like kind of our core systems that we might want to question. So next time, you know, you have the opportunity, or the next time you, or perhaps you can create the opportunity, you know, have a sleepover with your friends. We're all adults here, but you know, have a platonic sleepover, create a Facebook group, it might work. You know, try insinuating to your office that a nap room might actually make a lot of sense. And I hope, you know, I hope you sleep well. I hope next time that you sleep, you think of me, but, I hope you don't think of me. But if you do, that would be very nice. And I hope you actually just think about maybe there are some better and different ways to sleep. And I bid you good night. Thank you.
Adele Dahl.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Are there any questions? Any questions? Yes, you, sir.
Do you find it easy to sleep?
Is it easy for you to sleep?
Yes, extremely easy.
Do you find it hard to wake up?
No.
right. So you pretty much got it made,
yeah,
sleep-wise.
So the interesting thing is that I would like to think it's because of what I've done that I've made it really easy to sleep. Although recently I did go to the doctor and he said I might have apnea.
You might have apnea?
I might have sleep apnea.
All right.
And so he's like, you might be just exhausted and why you can sleep very easily. I thought it was a feel-good story. It really isn't.
But if you don't have trouble getting up, I'm no doctor, but I am a doctor.
You are.
And if you don't have trouble getting up, it would suggest to me that you're reasonably well rested.
That's the thing. I am doing a sleep study as we speak.
Oh, you're doing a sleep study?
I'm just about to do one to figure out what the answer is to that question. So I don't think I've the apnea theory has been proposed to me several times over the course of my life, and I kept brushing it off. But I figured I should probably just make sure about it. Through research of doing this, I was like, maybe I should just double check.
Right. And so, it's exciting because it gives you another place to sleep in a
exactly.
lab. You're like, oh, I haven't slept in a lab before, I'm guessing. I don't know.
No.
Have you slept in a lab?
No, I haven't. I don't think so.
Right. There you go. So he's good at sleeping. He's good at all facets of sleeping, except possibly breathing while doing it,
right.
If you believe his doctor. Yes, you, sir.
Where's the one place you slept that surprised you the most?
What's the place you've slept that surprised you the most?
So I guess this is less surprising but more embarrassing. It actually more is a consequence of being hungover and working in an office before the one I was at now that didn't have a nap room. But I have to imagine I'm not the only one that's done this. Have you ever gone to a urinal and put your head against the wall?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Mowat Park guy. Anyway, so I've a couple of times put my head against the urinal wall and just dozed off for half an hour or so.
Now wait, why? Well, that's my question. Why? Like, of all the places to sleep, like, I can see how it's hard to find somewhere to sleep. But would you do you necessarily like? Oh, is the smell of urine relaxing to you?
Right.
Or like
right.
I think you would imagine there'd be better places.
Well, I worked at an insurance company, so they clean their washrooms very well. There was no urine smell.
No, but why
to answer your question. I don't know, at that point I was working in an environment where sleeping on the job or sleeping at any point during the day was somewhat condoned. And
right.
So it's winter, you can't go home.
Right.
Where do you sleep? Where do you hide?
Okay, even if you were to say to me, okay, Misha, go find the very best place to nap in the bathroom, I would say sitting on a stall. I would say that would be better than standing up at the urinal because I am concealed and I'm not standing.
Right.
So even in the bathroom, it's not the best place to sleep, I would say.
So it is sitting in the stall.
Oh, you're sitting in the stall.
Yeah, yes.
I thought you said leaning your head over the urinal.
I think I did say urinal, so I missed that. But what I meant to say is sitting in the stall, but with my head against the...
Oh, that's perfectly reasonable.
Okay.
And that guy's crazy.
Oh, you people thought I was weird. Sorry.
Right,
I'm glad we cleared that up. Thank you.
Yeah, who among us hasn't slept on a public toilet?
Okay. Jesus.
All right. Yeah, of course. Yes, you, ma'am.
Do you think that this could work in any workplace? So, for example, like, I teach high school kids, so do you think that would be a problem?
Could this work in any workplace, for example, as a high school teacher, as this woman is? You mean sleeping at work or sleeping in the bathroom? Or both?
Obviously,
either. Right. So sleeping.
So I do think so, but I think it needs to be understood that everyone can do it. So I didn't want to bring another example from Japan, but apparently they're really different thinking about sleep. But in their school system, they do have nap time to which both students and teachers are encouraged to put their head on the desk and go to sleep. So it happens.
You're so happy. That's what the only problem with my job is the having to be conscious for all of it thing. You're
right.
People can sleep there. Okay. So they have nap times in schools.
Yep, they have nap times where the teachers are encouraged to sleep as well.
Everyone. Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I guess so.
That's hard to picture.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. Are you, now would you, as a teacher, what age group do you teach?
14 to 18 year olds.
You teach 14 to 18 year olds. Would you be comfortable sleeping in a room full of 14 to 18 year olds?
Honestly, sometimes you just really need to.
Right, you're just so tired. But it's funny because it seems like the relationship between a high school teacher and student is such that you can't sleep because they're scary, right? Teenagers. Can you imagine a world in which you would be able to do that?
I think if you let them sleep, you're gonna sleep.
If everyone was sleeping.
And so am I. All right. I think they'd be cool with that.
Okay. Okay, so that's fine. Okay. Yes, you over there, right? Yeah.
Can you provide us some kind of visual
Can you tell us more about how you sleep at the office so that we can picture it?
So the place that I work at is called the Center for Social Innovation. There are lots of lovely couches that exist there. In particular, lately, I've kind of evolved from sleeping in a public space with a sofa to now I do sleep in a room where I can actually close the door. As I mentioned, I do have a blanket and pillow and a toothbrush. I don't know, what else you want to know about that?
Pajamas? Do you have pajamas? Do you picture him with like a long pointy hat? Right?
Yeah. No pajamas. I usually take off my wet jeans and that's about it.
All right. Sheets are wet now. They're not. Yeah, everyone's like the story just got sexier for everybody. I'm gonna get out of these wet things and sleep at the office. All right, you in the back? Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
I have a two-part question.
Oh, God damn you to hell, Becky.
First question, clarification though, which is, where in the management structure of this job do you fit in?
What's your? Who are you in this organization? Are you like a peon?
I'm a director at the organization.
Oh, you're a director? Okay, so you...
So the second part is that, so you're living fairly high up, I guess. Yeah. Are there constructs in place for the other employees to nap or sleep over?
What about the underlings? Can they sleep, or is it only you, the king, who can sleep? Is that, I'm paraphrasing, but is that... Right. Are you allowed to kick anybody out of their desk so you can sleep at it?
Like right. That would be great. We have nap rooms now in all of our, we have three spaces here in Toronto. So we do have nap rooms in all of our spaces now. So people, be it our staff or people who are our spaces, are encouraged, should they want to take a nap.
So there you go. So anybody, that's presumably one of the social innovations that they're working on, is that anybody can sleep there. Now, the one thing that I want to just address before we go any further is that, to me, there are actually two separate things that you're talking about. And one thing is this very humane idea, it seems to me, of the idea that in our day-to-day lives, there might be more opportunities for more flexibility about sleep, and that our institutions might be more supportive of sleep, like the workplace, you know, might not shun sleep. If you're tired, you should take a nap. And that all seems very nice and very humane and very personal. That seems to me to be very different from never going home from work, which seems to me what you're actually describing in yourself.
Right.
Like, you're not like, oh, I like to have a little siesta once in a while. You're like, I like to always be working and never go home. And that seems like a different, like, do those feel to you like different things, or?
Here's the thing. When I do sleep over at the office, I'm not necessarily working the entire time.
Right.
Or the time that I'm awake. So occasionally I move furniture as a way of getting exercise. I read, I make food. There's lots of things to do there.
Great security department.
Hey, what?
I'm security.
He keeps the place safe. He's like, people are like, oh.
Which has happened before. I've encountered people there at night that shouldn't have been there, and I've acted within a security role.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds to me like work. Like that seems to be like a failure to, like a, not a failure, but a failure to let go of the workplace if you're like staying there in case someone should come by or whatever.
It's
like
possible.
That's a lot, like you're taking some responsibility. But do you think that part of it is that? Like, do you think that part of it is like not letting go of work in some, like, because even when you talk about it, there's something in how you talk about it where it's like you think it's cool, but there's also a part of it where it feels you talk about it as something that like you allow yourself to do or something. So like maybe there's some sort of indulgence, and I'm curious what, like, do you think it's an indulgence in something like overwork or something like that, or am I reading that into it?
So, I think actually you picked up on something pretty accurate. It's a larger part of the story, which didn't make sense to include in this part, but I live at home with my family.
Oh, okay.
And as a consequence...
By your family, you don't mean your wife and kids.
No. I mean my sisters and mother and et cetera. Okay. And so I feel like I don't often have space.
Right.
So when I overnight at the office, it's my sanctuary for space, I guess, would probably... I don't mark in my calendar, okay, I need some time to go alone, to be alone. But I think that's probably what I'm going for. Less about work and more about space.
Okay, so that's a big deal. If you're home, because it would be very different if your family was, say, your partner and children, and you were like, oh, I like to sleep at the office all the time.
Right,
that'd be a very different.
I don't know,
it's just comfortable here.
Right, totally.
Here.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be a different story. But of course, if I, Yeah, if I lived with my parents, I would sleep in my office all the time.
Right.
Absolutely. Completely reasonable. I would get a job so that I could have an office,
right.
So that I could sleep
exactly.
there all the time.
That was the plan.
Okay, so that makes that changes things. Yeah. That does change things. If your home isn't so, in fact, your office in some way functions like what most people think of in like North American sort of middle class society, what people think of as a home for a single person, which is like a place you have to yourself. You actually have that more at your office than
to,
you have in your
to
home.
To effect. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You, yes.
In your research about some of these countries that have a siesta, like Spain and Egypt, my family's from Greece and I lived for a number of years in Italy, and so I experienced siesta firsthand, and I did it as a professional. I would go home and sleep. I found it very refreshing. However, those countries are like the best examples of basket case economies and
So the question is given. Right. So the question is given the completely dismal economies of the countries
right.
that have siestas. Should we emulate that?
I was hoping no one would pick up on that relationship.
Right,
yeah.
It was fun. You
the
did
smart
that.
Man.
It felt good.
Yeah.
And you were very unproductive.
Right. No. It is a very valid connection to make. I was thinking less, and there might very well be a connection between the two. My lens was thinking less about it from an, is this good for the economy, and more about is this good for us as individuals?
Oh, sure, all the individuals are clapping.
Yeah.
But the economy is shedding a tear. and you're causing him to be unemployed with your devil-may-care, growth-reducing attitudes. If you were just awake, this man would have a job. Yes, you ma'am, yes. Yeah, you sure.
Do you have different dreams at work than at home?
Do you have different dreams at work than at home?
I don't know, but that's a great question.
All right.
I'm sorry.
It's an honest answer, I assume. You, sir,
So you told us about sleeping pods in Japan. Do you think that's a viable business model to bring to Canada?
Do you think we could have sleep? You were talking about sleeping pods.
The sleeping pods
Google.
Are actually at Google, so they're already in Canada. I would imagine they're certainly at their Mountain View campus, but I think the company's actually based in the States. So that
but now are you wondering about like public sleeping pods for like the Japanese micro hotel kind of things or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
So could we have that where you could just go and have a little?
I don't know if we have something equivalent to a short term sleep hotel.
Yeah.
I think we do, but I think they're much more seedier in intentions. But I do think there's probably a business model in that, but I do think that there's probably some system change that we have to have in order to accept it a little bit more.
Are you ever in a situation where you're like out in public and you really want to sleep and you're trying to find a place to sleep? Like does that?
That's
sleep?
What parks are for.
That's what parks.
Parks.
So are you okay? Yeah, you sleep in a park.
Assuming the weather is good.
Yeah, if the weather's good and you're like,
yeah.
I want a little nap, and you'll take a nap in a park.
Sure.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I did that one time and I was like. I found it really weird because that to me was like sleeping in front of like high school students. Like I'm like there's a like I'm like normally it's not like I don't feel threatened,
right.
But it's a lot of trust in some way or something the people around you to be asleep in.
I guess you just have to trust the community that you're
yeah,
in.
Yeah,
right?
And I guess again once I was asleep I was fine.
Right.
I was fine.
I'm glad you fell asleep.
Yeah. And then also the other thing I was aware of is that I was like my sense is that like we are allowed to do that. Like it feels like it's like a privilege thing. To, like, are you allowed to sleep in public? Are you even allowed to, or do you have to like look like a, like, are you gonna get? I don't know.
I don't know
where I'm going with this. Does anyone know? Is there like, are you allowed to sleep in public? Becky, you know, you have your hand up because you know the answer to all these things.
Oh, I have something I want to say. I watched an episode of Dragon's Den where this woman tried to propose that, and they laughed at her.
An episode of what?
Dragon's Den.
Dragon's Den. What is that?
It's like these venture capitalists.
Oh, it's a venture capital show. Okay.
Becky doesn't think our culture
is ready for the sleeping pods because on Dragon's Den people ridiculed it.
Right.
Well, there you go. That's something to know.
Well, if we want Kevin O'Leary to determine our what's standard in our society, then I guess that would be it.
any other questions? Anything else you would like to know? Yeah. Okay, Matt. Yeah.
How far does your sleeping routine go at the office? Do you have toiletries or like Do you have a routine?
How far does the sleeping routine go at the office? Yep. What sort of toiletries?
Toothbrush, shower down the street, blanket, pillow. What else do you need to sleep?
Change of clothes.
Do you watch a TV show on Netflix?
Do you watch a TV show on Netflix like a normal person?
No, that's fair. I maybe once in a while I'll watch a movie, but no, like I think if I am staying at the office, I try and maximize the productive time that I have, and maybe as a wind down, I will watch Netflix.
You have like a wind down time where you really live at the office for a little while.
Right.
Do you make popcorn?
Right.
Does Jesse make popcorn?
Yeah, I make popcorn.
There is popcorn.
There's popcorn.
Popcorn is made.
All right. Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, okay. It's an office, it's not a prison.
Right.
Okay.
We all eat popcorn in the office, just at different times.
All right, okay. Right. You, yes, you, sir.
All right, so, Adil, you said the optimal is like 4-hour chunks of sleep, not 8 hours. So if we were to take our 8 hours, break it up into 2 4-hour chunks, how do you see us reformatting our 24-hour clock?
How would we do with our 24-hour clock if we broke up our 8 hours into 4-hour chunks?
It's a great question, and so that's exactly it. That's the type of system change that is worth considering, right? I think that if you work in certain professions, for example, if you are a graphic designer, you could perhaps do a bunch of your work in the time period that from 2 to 6 a.m. In fact, you might find yourself super productive given that your most of the world is awake at that point. But this does require probably a larger shift, and I don't really know what's required to make that happen.
But I mean, presumably, it's still a 24-hour. Like, just if you move it around, it doesn't stop being 24 hours, right? Like, it's not like Spain still has a 24-hour day. They just
break it up.
Oh, I see. Just where do you put it? Okay.
Yeah. So I think that 10 to 2, 2 to 6, 6 to 10. That's something.
So you think
there's something
sleep,
around that?
So
that
a good so a good time would be to sleep from 10 to 2, like from 10 p.m.
I think 10 to 2 is an ideal time to sleep. Get up at 2, work
do
until
4 hours of work.
Yep. Go sleep from 6 to 10.
6 to 10,
and then go
and
on.
Then
yeah.
Do some more work.
Yep.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. There's the answer. Are you going to do that?
Yeah, I'm gonna try tonight.
Okay. Good.
Right.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, that seems good. I think if you change just one
think
person, we've succeeded. What? That's right, you've already messed up. You're past your bedtime. Well, let's wrap it up so you can go to bed. We'll end it there. Ladies and gentlemen, Adil Dhalla.
Thank you.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Mark Rial. This podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.